Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 160 of Her. This is the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, well, her relationships with a little bit of a twist to it. You're going to love it. This terrific show that's coming up is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review this number one show. We look forward to hearing from you. And guess what? I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs after the show, waiting to hear your feedback. So come on down. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Oh my goodness gracious, the title of this episode, but why would you go home with him? Oh my gosh, that is so perfect. And this is really based upon a brand new book that's out that is an absolute must. It's called Love Rules. And the author is Joanna Coles, who I know very well from the publishing industry. She's the chief content officer of Hearst Magazine. She was executive producer and star of the docuseries So Cosmo on E! And the executive producer of The Bold Type on Freeform, a scripted show inspired by her life as a magazine editor. Born in the United Kingdom, Coles was the New York correspondent for The Guardian and The Times of London before joining Hearst as editor-in-chief of Marie Claire. She was editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan from 2012 to 2016. Ah, Joanna, welcome to the Her podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Well, like I said, I could listen to your accent all day long. So
I think I'm just looking. It puts 25 points on my IQ, which I'm very excited about, and I now wish I'd moved here 20 years earlier.
Oh my gosh, I just love it. So I want to read something from the jacket of your book, Love Rules. And the subtitle is How to Find a Real Relationship in a Digital World. And my subtitle is Good Luck with That. Okay, so just as there's junk food, there's junk love. I'm sorry, that's just going to go right into the Urban Dictionary, junk love. And like junk love, like junk food, junk love is widely available, tantalizingly packaged, superficially tasty, and leaves you hungering for more. And throughout this entire book, I notice, Joanna, that, you know, the titles of the chapters all kind of play to this. So let's start with establish your ideal love weight. What in heaven's name is that?
Well, your ideal love weight is really about choosing someone or aiming for someone that's realistic. And I think women spend an enormous amount of time thinking about food. And I know when I'm approaching a diet, I always say things, and I know other women do this too, and they say, I need to lose 40 pounds and I need to lose it right now. I'm not going to eat for 10 days. And of course, the next day, you're absolutely starving. You're putting in anything you can find. And you're sort of overshooting. And instead of doing the long, sustainable, you know, eating three quarters of your normal portion size and watching the weight loss slip away over a period of time, you want a sort of fast shock to the system. And that doesn't work in relationships. You can't fast forward love. You have to get to know someone slowly and properly. And also, bad news for anybody listening, Ryan Gosling has already been taken. And I think that women often think that, oh, God, if I could just meet Ryan Gosling, I know we'd connect and it would all be marvelous. And when you listen to people talking about the kind of guy they would like to date, they're often selecting celebrities. And in fact, those celebrities aren't really on offer. And so look around your circle, figure out the kinds of people. There might be someone even hiding in plain sight. but figure out actually realistically where your person might be found if you're looking for a partner. So it's really being realistic. And if you're, you know, 5'6" and you're 185 pounds, don't try and get down to 105 pounds. You're just going to meet misery along the way. Maybe you compromise at 140 pounds.
I absolutely love it. And you know, when I was reading that, my smile was a mile wide, because I, of course, this resonates with me. I totally get it. And I hope to heck all of my wonderful listeners out there in her podcast land get it too. And you know, this was followed by chapters that any woman could immediately get the analogy. Clear out your cupboards and sweep the fridge. And that means, okay, hello, loser boyfriends, loser people in your life. I mean, seriously. And then begin a dating detox to reset your metabolism. Go to that dating detox place, Joanna.
Well, I think it's very easy. We all know that we do this. I'll give you my analogy. The dating detox is really about, imagine you were going on a cleanse, right? And the problem is that at 4 o'clock, you hit a sort of low point and your energy is low and you reach for the donut. And you eat the donut, it's delicious, it's familiar, it's sweet, the mouthfeel is sensational. But half an hour later, you're bent double in remorse, thinking, ugh, why did I do that? What a waste of calories. And I think we do the same with people, that, you know, we panic when we get a little bit lonely, we reach out for the phone, we call the ex-boyfriend, and he's the equivalent of the donut. He's familiar, he's sweet, you know what it tastes like. And in the moment, you're satisfied. But an hour later, you're even more hungry for the real thing, and you're full of remorse. And so it's really about getting rid of all this, getting rid of it all, cleaning the system out, and getting ready to reset your metabolism so that you're excited and available to the new thing.
Excellent. And then that's followed by, and I'm really happy, of course, as a active triathlete, that you added a little fitness, you know, metaphor in here. So you said the treadmill won't run on its own. Climb on and press start. Now, go ahead and tell us what you meant by that.
Well, I bet there are a lot of people listening who've got all sorts of exercise equipment that they bought with the full intention of using it. And somehow in the process of buying it, you think you have used it. And then you end up either with a treadmill at home or a stair climber at home that you bought full of good intentions and it's now used to hang clothes on, or you have weights which are gathering dust under the bed. And the point is, it's not enough to have a treadmill. You have to press start. You have to get on. And that, I mean that with dating apps. So when you talk to a lot of people, they're like, oh, I don't want to use dating apps, or, oh, yes, I'm on Tinder. And then you say, well, when did you last go on a date? And they say, oh, I haven't been on it for 6 months because I was starting to get all sorts of pics I didn't like or whatever. The point is, if you want to meet someone, you have to be serious about it, in the same way that if you want to get fit, you do actually have to do the work. Now, with love and dating, it shouldn't actually feel like work. It should feel like fun. So you want to organize things with other people. Don't always make it an intense one-on-one arrangement. You know, meet up with friends, do things around events or things you can have in common. You know, maybe borrow a friend's dog, go for a walk in a park, go for an exhibition. Do things that you can do with people so you have something to talk about. Don't sit across from each other at a bar staring at each other trying to figure out if you find them attractive. The answer is going to be no, probably not. But the point is, you've got to be active. You've got to have fun meeting people. Don't make it a chore. And like exercise, set it up as a sort of routine so that you're not arguing about, and I mean arguing with yourself about whether or not you do it, you commit to doing it. And if you're on a dating app, maybe you commit to one date a week, which means over the total of a year, that's 52 people that you would have met. Within those 52 people, there may well be 10, 15 people that you want to see again. Of those 52, there might not be the one, but of the 10 or the 15 people that you might add to your friend circle, they will know other people. Your life gets bigger. Your social circle gets bigger. There's more opportunity. And that's how you actually meet people.
It's called working it. You got to work it. You know, people say, oh, my God, you're so lucky. Well, you know, I just had on the her podcast, Janice Kaplan, who many people know from television as a producer, et cetera. And, you know, she wrote a book, a brand new book called How Luck Happens. And her definition of luck, and this is based upon, believe it or not, science, a luck lab. She worked on this with a scientist in this field. She said it's the intersection of hard work, preparation slash talent. In other words, you know what your talent is. You prepare. You take that hard work and chance. So hard work, preparation, yep. and chance, they all come together. Well, guess what?
Yep.
A lot of people forget about the hard work part. you expect to just sit there.
Absolutely. And I think for this, and it is like exercise. Exercise can be really hard work if you're doing it on your own, if you're always doing the same routine, if you make it boring. But if you join a running club or you join a gym or you sign up for a trainer or you go to an exercise class with friends, it can be fun, right? And in fact, you look forward to it. I love playing tennis. I have a great group of friends I play tennis with. That's my exercise. What fun. If I had to work out on my own in a gym, you know, I'd never get round to doing it. And I'd always talk myself out of doing it because I'd find something more fun to do, probably like drinking milk and eating donuts. And I think don't look at this as a chore. Don't look at it as constantly finding the one and then not being able to find the one because you're setting yourself up for the impossible. Instead, set out to have fun with a group of people doing something that's bigger than the sum of you, and you will have more fun and you will meet people.
I love it. You know, you have a section here, part three, called Shortcomings and Love Traps. Of course, rule number nine, there are 15 rules. Rule number nine just absolutely requires an explanation by you. Hookups are like French fries.
Rule number nine is hookups are like French fries.
Absolutely. Okay, go for it.
Well, what I mean by this is a diet of French fries is going to leave you feeling sluggish, obese, not your best self, probably with breakouts, and just it's you cannot survive on a diet of French fries alone, delicious though they are. And my point about hookups is that the occasional hookup is not going to hurt you, but a consistent diet where your main relationships are just a relentless series of hookups is going to leave you lonely and feeling isolated. And I think part of this is acknowledging what one wants. So you have to think very hard about what stage you're in your life and what kind of a relationship matches that. And it may be that hookups are all you've got time for. But the goal here is to have a balanced diet of food, obviously, and of emotional nourishment in your relationship. And I think I interviewed hundreds of women, and over the years I've talked to hundreds of women about their relationships. And I'm sure pretty much everybody had a couple of hookups. But almost everybody, if they were being honest about it, didn't enjoy it as much as they expected. Often they were having a hookup in the expectation or hope that it was going to lead to something else. And it didn't satisfy their urges for intimacy, which is really what they were looking to do. So they can be fun in the moment, but they're not fun if you go into them hoping they're going to lead to something else.
I love it. I love it. And so that makes all the sense in the world. Again, I'm going crazy over this whole, you know, diet and fitness analogy, because it just makes all the sense. We understand one, we need to apply it to the other. And I think women today, I mean, I've seen some of the current research on what goes on with, say, for instance, porn, which is rule number 10. Porn is like chewing gum, all artificial flavor, that young men really look at that and expect that to be the situation when they actually have sex or a hookup with a woman. And that's kind of the end of it. It's sort of, well, okay, fine. It's a 6 to 8 minute proposition and we're kind of done here and thank you very much. So what was the bottom line you wanted to really deliver in terms of a message with rule number 10, porn is like chewing gum, all artificial flavor?
Well, I think the important thing to remind people around porn is that porn sex is not real sex. And we know there is just an enormous quantity of porn now online, that we have porn as our de facto sex education for an entire generation of boys and girls. And I'm not anti-porn, I'm just anti-porn as our sex education. But I think it's important to remember that porn is shot through the lens of a camera. So what works through a camera angle doesn't necessarily work for the human body, isn't necessarily comfortable. And I think it's important that men and women both remember this. And I talked to a lot of women who felt under tremendous pressure to behave like porn stars, to look like porn stars, and to say things that sort of give out the porn star script. And I think a lot of men feel under pressure to do that too. And if porn sex is really the only sex that you come across, it's not unexpected that you would expect that that's what sex is. But of course, it's not. And it's hard to have good sex with strangers. It's hard to have good sex when you've been drinking a lot, which is what people do often around strangers that they're expecting to have sex with. And I heard a lot from a lot of women that they were under pressure to get naked with strangers, and of course they drank, and then often they would end up blackout drunk, which was not necessarily what they planned to go into the evening with. But there's nothing empowering about waking up in bed on a Saturday morning unsure of what happened the night before, and God forbid, unsure of whether or not you were sexually assaulted. And I think we want to encourage people to take it slow, to not feel that you have to reenact a porn movie every time you get into bed with someone, and to actually begin the more difficult but much more fun work of sexual communication with someone.
I love that. Sexual communication with someone, really redefining. We're really trying to hold on to a fundamental understanding of connection between two people in the face of a digital world. I know you probably just saw that study, a very recent study, 2018 study of loneliness in America and maybe globally for all I know, and that that the young people, Generation Z and the millennials, are actually the loneliest of all. Just when we thought that it would be more like people over the age of, say, 60, 70, it's actually millennials. They were weaned on devices. And when they actually have to, go to a place of interpersonal communication and interaction, sometimes there's even a social peer pushback. Like if you look up in the Urban Dictionary, there's the word thirsty. It's like you're too thirsty. You want to have that connection too much. You're a loser. So just get back to your device again. Ouch. So when we're talking about love rules, you know, there's a piece of this that's also quite generational, don't you think?
I do. And I say to people who are using dating apps, don't waste a lot of time in sort of flirty text exchanges with someone you've matched with. They're still a stranger. And what happens, and there's a lot of sex, there's a lot of sex in the book, but there's a lot of science around digital behavior in the book. And what's fascinating is that when you communicate with someone in a computer-mediated environment, you end up filling in the gaps of knowledge about that person with positive attributes, and you create this persona which actually isn't a real persona at all. And Mary Aitken, one of the cyber psychologists we talked to, talks about every online date having four people present: the two actual real life people, and then the two presences they've created, the online media personalities, in a sense, that they've created. And then the expectation that when you meet that person, they will be, in fact, very different from who they are. And we know that online people get disinhibited very quickly, much faster online than they do in real life. And you say all sorts of things on text and on apps that you would never say to a person, especially one that you've just met. And I think this is partly, people love doing this because it's much easier than meeting someone in the flesh. And millennials in particular have gotten used to relying on the smartphone, ironically, not to use as a phone, but to use as a sort of texting or social media device. And actually, it's incredibly important to always talk to someone on the phone before you decide to meet them in real life. Why would you waste your time investing it in a meeting? And again, these are emotional calories. Why would you spend those on someone that you haven't even had a phone call with? And the more time you spend on devices, it's like a vicious circle. The more you want to spend on devices, the harder it is to have real life communication. And they are of different value. You mentioned the 2017, I think, survey on loneliness. Britain has just appointed its first loneliness minister. The rate of isolation there is so intense. And of course, it's ironic because these devices were supposed to connect us, and they do connect us, but they make it hard to get to know one another. That has to be done. I'm a big believer in doing that in real life, actually doing things with people. And I'm sort of fascinated by the idea that people think that a Facebook friend is the same as an actual friend. There should be a different word for it, because a Facebook friend is not actually a friend, and they've co-opted the word. A friend is someone you turn up for when you don't really want to. A friend is someone you listen to when they're droning on, or who listens to you when you're droning on. A friend is someone that you may have worked with, you may have shared experiences with, perhaps your godparent to their children. They've been in your wedding party. That's what a friend is. A friend is someone you've built up a history of experience with, and you've spent time with, and you've both sacrificed for each other and invested in this thing. This is not the same as someone who may have liked every single time you've posted. It is not the same relationship, and it's of lesser value. The digital relationship is of lesser value than a real life friend who will sit with you and hold your hand if you're having chemo.
I mean, just golden words of wisdom, to say the least. I've always felt, Joanna, that once the internet showed up, that was the first thing. Didn't Al Gore invent that? Well, anyway.
He did invent it. He invented the internet.
And then we had social media in all of its manifestations right now. You know what's fascinating is when all of this showed up, there was really no handbook for how to be, you know, the limits and boundaries of using this. This is something that parents had to stumble into when they found that the kids were just sleeping with their devices, living with their devices, not interacting with other kids and other adolescents. They were just doing that thing. What are the rules? What are the regulations? What are the limits and boundaries? We never thought about putting that together at the same time all of this new technology emerged. And I think now we're suffering for it. So sort of retroactively, we're trying to create some of that blueprint, almost a handbook for how to do this right. And then finally, rule number 15, yay. Life is a feast. Take your place at the table. Here's what you wrote. We must love one another or die, urged the poet W.H. Auden in a line that has stuck with me since high school. And I like the poignancy of Love Lost in the Rascal Flats. I'm glad you like that song, which I love too. I should have stolen every moment. Now there's a page with not enough on it. And let me add a final nod to, now you have to know, Joanna, he's one of my friends, Michael Pollan. Don't date someone your grandmother wouldn't want for you. Date someone who is kind and reliable, who loves you for who you are, who will treat you with respect, who will love you through thick and thin and sickness and in health, someone who makes you feel excited, happy, gorgeous, smart, and someone who you trust. Wow. Those are very, very powerful, wonderful, wonderful words. And then you end this entire rule beautifully. And here it comes. All right. So you write, the food of life, we crave it. We depend on it. And in so many ways, it is all that matters in the end. And you were referring to love. Whom you loved and who loved you back. Which is why we must choose it wisely and well. My final rule is simple. Life is a feast. So take your place at the table and love someone who knows you're special and loves you back. You deserve it. All right. Tell us what you think about that. What are your thoughts when you wrote that?
Well, I think your point about the web not coming with guidelines, I wanted this book to be operating instructions for dating apps to find what you want. And most people do actually, in the end, want someone to share life with. And in all the studies, and you will know this, Pam, being a doctor, every single study shows that other than your DNA and your genetics, which you really can't shift much, the single thing that will help you live a longer and a happier life, but a longer life, is the quality of who you love and who loves you back. It's your social networks, your real life social networks. And that's what this book is about. I want people to have a rich life. I want them to love. Inevitably, in some of that will be hurt, but I want them to get back up. And as your previous talker, Janet, talked about, she got on the treadmill, she read a poem, she got back out there. I want us to all be able to sit at the table and feast on what is the most important part of human life. It's the stuff that makes us feel alive. It's the connective tissue that holds us together as a human race. It's what differentiates us from animals. And it's where we derive great pleasure. And I want to remind people who are in that period of their lives where they're looking for someone and are feeling frustrated that it's okay, it will get better, and it's important to keep on looking and to have fun while you're doing it, because this really is the stuff of life.
Just golden words, once again, platinum in that case. A little bit of science. What we found in science is that surely we've all heard about staying physically active. Surely we've all heard about making certain to eat whole foods and, you know, ditch all of the processed junk. Speaking of junk food, and also to, you know, get enough sleep and all the rest of it. Something we didn't know until probably the last 5-6 years when published literature started emerging in this field is that social connectivity is equal to, if not more powerful than, the nutrition and the fitness. Now, when I first saw that, I almost fell off my chair. This began with work that was done looking at older people, in this case, who would interconnect, say, for instance, with Mahjong night, with bingo night, with their little clubs, with whatever they do. Those people had higher quality of life, greater longevity. But when I say longevity, it's not just, you know, lifespan in terms of years is just one thing. What we're interested in is vibrancy span, health span. How many years are you absolutely optimally ready to rock and roll? That's what we really want to enhance. We found that interconnectivity, sharing, even if it's flipping with your dog, I mean, you got to have connections out there. No man or woman is an island. I mean, with all due respect to Thoreau and the rest of them, he still had interconnections too. So I think when you said that at the end, when you embraced that, I just clapped, and I hope you heard my applause, because it was really truly about that, because that's the richness that really ties all of this wonderful advice and information and science together. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think it's very important, and it's what makes life worth living.
Yep, you got that one. Oh my goodness gracious. Everyone out there, we have been talking to Joanna Coles. She is the chief content officer of Hearst Magazines. She is also the author of a book you have got to grab. This is going to be your guideline for how to find a real relationship in a digital world. The name of the book is Love Rules. Love Rules. Just run and get it. Joanna, I can't thank you enough for being on the Her podcast. This has just been a terrific episode. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Now, everyone out there, run on over to iTunes, rate and review this episode, because it has been fantastic. And I really want to hear from you. Give us your feedback. And guess what? Here's a thanks for listening today, and stay well.